Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, this is Lily Gorin with the New Books Network, the New Books in Political Science podcast. Today, I'm joined by my colleague and longtime politics, literature, film, and the arts collaborator in crimes, Lee Trepanier, who is the author, or the editor of Making Sense of Diseases and Disasters, Reflections of Political Theory from Antiquity to the Age of COVID. This is a really interesting compilation of explorations into the idea of diseases from, you know, discussions in ancient texts, both plays and histories, to more contemporary writers like Locke and Bacon, who themselves were living through plagues and diseases. And of course, it's kind of bookended on either side by really thinkings about contemporary responses to not only COVID, but also other experiences like Fukushima, 9/11, and so forth. But I'm going to let Lee take us on a little tour of this edited volume. First, I'd like to welcome Lee to the New Books in Political Science podcast and ask him to tell us a little bit about himself and how this project unfolded.
Well, thank you, Lily, for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it. It was an interesting book. Obviously, this book was prompted by the COVID pandemic. It prompted me to think about what not only the United States response to COVID, but in terms of how other societies have responded to COVID, and then it sort of broadened to diseases, and then even broadened even further to disasters. And so, how do societies react when they're confronted with diseases and disasters? Do they react in a way where they try to blame a group that's responsible for it and scapegoat them? Or do they react in a way where they try to care for one another and cooperate and try to face the common disease or disaster together? So those were sort of raised for me interesting sort of political questions and questions of political philosophy. So initially, I talked to some colleagues and see whether they would be interested in writing on this topic. We initially limited it to diseases, but then as I was thinking about more and more, there are actually some events, as you mentioned, like 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, plagues in the past that also I think needed to be addressed as well. So we were able to, I think, collect a number of rising scholars and established scholars to address these issues. The book itself is divided into four sections. The first really deals with the COVID pandemic. The second one is sort of looking at the role of diseases and plagues in sort of the early modern to modern period, both in Europe and in America when it was colonized. And the third section sort of looks at the role of plagues and diseases and disasters in antiquity, classical Rome and classical Greece. And then the fourth section we do sort of, it's more of a literary approach to sort of questions of diseases and disasters, things such as 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, so on and so forth. So the theme of disease and disasters is a theme that unites the book, but we've taken a sort of multidisciplinary approach, inviting communication scholars, literature scholars, political theorists, philosophers, theologians to write on what they think, how societies and thinkers react in times of crisis.
Yeah. And again, there's like a whole variety of interrogations that are going on in this book, which you nicely kind of group together in these sections that help to think about, you know, again, we're still coming out of COVID, and we still have a very present understanding of something like 9/11. But you also talk about, or your authors talk about, you know, how other cultures and other societies have sort of wrestled with COVID. That's a sort of the first part of the book. Can you explain a little bit about how the thinking went on sort of pulling different scholars together to think about not only the US's response or the West's response, but, you know, what we start to understand about humanity and ourselves from COVID?
Sure. No, I think it is a great way to sort of have that interdisciplinary perspective and global perspective on COVID. I think what we've seen, what the authors address, for example, is in some cases you have societies that sort of react in a very, polarized or factionist sort of way, where they sort of promote a certain ideology. One of the authors points out, for example, that it's, this was a perfect opportunity for the rise of sort of white Christian nationalism to reassert itself and sort of play on the fears of the American public to take advantage of the pandemic and sort of reconfigure political order in a different sort of way. Authors have looked at sort of as an opportunity for social cooperation and teaching, trying to emphasize the virtues of interdependence and the common good in society. One of the chapters, one of my favorites, is Lorraine Craw McCrae's chapter, which is not directly on COVID, but it's on the Hull House and how the women in Chicago, Jane Addams and others, dealt with sort of thyroid and other diseases during that time. And what their response was, as she points out, is really the response at the end of the day has to be sort of referred to local knowledge and local actors. Yes, it would be great to have sort of the state or the federal government intervene, but at the end of the day, dealing with diseases and disaster is a local phenomenon, and it requires sort of local knowledge and local response to that. And that's where the most impact is being made. So it's a variety of reactions to that. I think another one in terms of the global perspective, another chapter I really enjoyed was Brian Hamm's chapter, which was on Bartolome de la Casas, which talks about how sort of when the Spanish colonized the Americans, it obviously they carried the plague or pestilence, which decimated the indigenous populations of the Americas. But what Brian shows out is actually for some of the Spanish explorers, like Casas, is it was also a view of sort of not just physical disease, but also sense of spiritual disease of what colonialism can do, not only to the people they're enslaving, but to the people who are enslaving them, that this is sort of a betrayal of their spiritual values and of sort of Catholic Spain, as it were. So it's sort of the plague or the disease was both spiritual and physical in that way. And I think that's a theme you also see in some of the other chapters, whether it's Thucydides or Camus or some of the other thinkers we look at.
Yeah, and that's certainly something that, you know, we've all experienced, I think, in living through this pandemic or trying to live through the pandemic, is that it wasn't just about, you know, the fear to our physical well-being and our mortality, but also very much, you know, what it was that we came to miss. And I know that, you know, social interaction for so many people was something that they found this profound kind of angst about not being able to be with other people. And that seems like what some of your authors are talking about in terms of like the physical and the spiritual, and how do we understand ourselves in that you know, that capacity. We go back to our Aristotelian roots of all being political beings.
No, I think that's exactly right. And then it's also, I mean, it's also the deal of there's also a sense, I think what you see in some of the chapters on the modern thinkers is a sense of trying to conquer that, right? And this is part of the modern project, not just in terms of conquering nature and conquering disease. I mean, we have a chapter on Bacon that talks about sort of Bacon's approach to that's Evan Lowe's chapter on Bacon, which is whole projects is to conquer nature to make our life better in terms of material comfort. And this, of course, is aimed at diseases. But you also see it in the chapters on Locke and Rousseau, where it's not just the trying to physically improve or materially improve society, but also in a way sort of mentally or intellectually improve society, if found society on a new foundation, as it were. So I think this project of modernity, of founding a new society, both physically and intellectually, works really well in those chapters on the topic of disease. Because disease is what they're directly dealing with, but it obviously has larger implications than that.
And I think the author who wrote about Locke, I'm sorry, I don't remember who wrote that, was also talking about the fact that Locke was living through the diseases.
That's right, yeah.
And so when we start to think about Locke's commitment to security and stability in the second treatise, that is also likely informed by the lack of security and instability given, you know, society's responses in the 1600s to, you know, the threat of plague and disease.
No, that's right. That chapter is by Kevin Kearns, and I think he does a wonderful job of showing that, you know, when Locke is concerned about security, it's not, everyone thinks it's sort of the political conflict of Europe and England at the time, but it's also the worry of the London Plague that he lived through, and which had a devastating effect on Locke and other writers, Swift and Defoe, when they write about it. So this sense of trying to, I think scientifically, medically, politically, what security in all its aspects is a primary concern of these early modern thinkers.
And you also have, before you get to the section, you have the section on the early modern thinkers, but in between, you have a section that is about the ancients, or excuse me, that's a little bit, I'm putting this in the wrong order. Section 3 is about antiquity. And I was really intrigued by Marlene Sokolon's chapter on Sophocles and also Habib's chapter on Thucydides. Can you talk a little bit about these sort of chapters that specifically look at these ancient texts and how they respond to diseases in antiquity as well as the gods?
Right. Well, Marlene looks at Sophocles' plays of Philocles, which he's diseased and stranded on the island, and then the Greeks come back to because they need his bow to win the Trojan War, and they basically lie to him and trick him to have him join them. But what Marlene, I think, beautifully examines is sort of the tension between the individual and the community, and that tension between acting out self-interest and self-preservation and what's needed for the common good. And what role does disease play in that? And, how is that received by the community and by the individual? In terms of Khalil's, Habib's paper, which is on the Peloponnesian War, he looks at the plague that affects Athens during the Peloponnesian War. And what he basically argues that it's the Athenian drive for conquest and imperialism that essentially leads to this, to the plague in Athens, is both a sort of spiritual plague and a political plague as well. And this has sort of detrimental effects to sort of Athenian democracy, and it really corrupts them in this way. I think in this chapter, what's really interesting is sort of the notion of the gods at play, right? It's sort of, fortune or chance that plays in the roles of lives and dramatically affects historical events. I mean, and I think I know I myself, and I think my students, when we read ancient texts and you know, they talk about the God and you think, oh, this is sort of silly and what's going on here. But you, when you think of it in terms of, well, you don't really have control over your whole life. You know, societies don't really have a complete autonomy. They're dependent upon the fickleness of fate. And I think the pandemic has really been a humbling lesson for all of us in that, you know, that, I mean, who would have thought that we, in our lifetimes, we would have to live in a pandemic. We'd be, you know, socially isolated. It's sort of mind boggling in that way. But it's, in some ways, the ancients are probably more wise and receptive to the fickleness of life than the moderns are.
And again, you know, there's certainly this idea of fortune, which comes up very blatantly in Machiavelli's Prince as something that, you know, we always want to try to control because then we can figure out what the outcomes of situations will be. And something like plagues or diseases just, you know, kind of get in the way of that. the final section of the book, section four, is reflections on surviving disasters. And this is where you sort of branch out from diseases to disasters more particularly. And so there's the tsunami in India. There's Fukushima's disaster that was the result of earthquakes and tidal waves. And I remember following that because I was teaching public policy at the time, and we do a section on disaster policy, and there's the sort of unfolding horror of the Fukushima situation. And so my students and I were sort of following it day to day to sort of see what was going on. And then of course you have nods at literature with regard to Hurricane Katrina, 9/11. And then a sort of created catastrophe with regard to blindness. So this is a much more modern, contemporary section. And so how did you pull these particular authors and ideas together?
Well, there's a couple of things when I asked these authors to write for this volume. One, of course, I wanted to look at sort of contemporary disasters. So something in the 21st century. I think that was sort of because there's unfortunately been so many diseases and disasters in our history, it's hard to pick which one to select. But so I've sort of limited in the 21st century. The second, I wanted to do something from advice scholars who are from communications and English. I think they provide a unique insight to sort of the human condition and society that quite frankly, that political theorists and philosophers may lack sometimes. So that was sort of the reasoning behind it. It worked out sort of nicely where you have two sort of man-made disasters, 9/11 and Fukushima, and then two that are sort of by nature, you know, the tsunami, the Indian Boxing Day tsunami and Hurricane Katrina. And of course, the last blindness is sort of a fictional account of disaster. But that was sort of my thinking going into the selection process. I think what you find in this section is really the sense of people. You see a couple themes emerge. One is the theme of how are these disasters portrayed, especially in sort of in a mass media culture where communication is instantaneous. How are they portrayed, and how do we make sense of that? Are we overwhelmed with images? I mean, this is sort of the chapter by Michael Bulliard on 9/11, and you know, how do we make sense of this? It's sort of an oversaturated media culture, and that's it. Where can we find or locate the human element within that? And the sort of another theme I think you find out is the question of sort of the role of memory. How do we remember these events that are sort of inexplicable? You know, how do we remember the dead? How do we remember? How do the living remember the dead to properly recognize, you know, what they went through in that way? And then finally, I think a third theme that emerges is really the sense of identity and cooperation. Is that when we're faced with disasters and diseases, that what we thought our identity once was has to change in order to sort of constructively meet the challenge in front of us. If we sort of stick with the way of our sort of preformed identity, it's going to just only end up in conflict as opposed to cooperation.
And so you have this, you know, these four sections. You've got different thinkers, you've got different writers, which is often a challenge with an edited volume, as I well know. But I do see a couple of interesting themes that are kind of embedded throughout the whole book. One of the themes that I do see sort of in most of the sections is a kind of thinking about Catholic responses to sort of acts of God and the human predicament. I think I saw that in a number of places. We have a couple chapters on St. Augustine. You have, you know, sort of the sections early on with regard to the Catholic social teaching, so that there's a thread about not just Christianity, but particularly Catholicism coming through. Can you talk a little bit about how some of these authors were drawn into some of that thinking?
Well, I'll be frank with you. I think that was just that was unintentional and that was accidental. So I wasn't planning it that way, but it was nicely helped about the volume when it came out turned out that way. So certainly, what I think with sort of the Catholic response to disease and disasters is sort of is grounded in the Catholic Church social teaching of social justice. So. When you see the chapter on COVID, that is mostly about sort of religious freedom in the face of government restrictions, but it also addresses questions of sort of the common good, the virtue, and most importantly, of interdependence, that we're all interdependent upon one another, and we need to be aware of that. Another chapter that sort of indirectly deals with Catholicism is Brian Hamm's chapter on De La Casas, and so how that, you know, sort of we already talked about that, but sort of, you know, the spiritual implications of sort of European disease and slavery in the New World. In terms of the two Augustine chapters, that was sort of interesting. I think one, Paul Krause's chapter sort of makes a case that, that the role of women were better treated under Catholicism. Under Christianity than the Roman Republic in times of disaster. And then Richard Arvamenko and Alison Rosema chapter really looks at just a really, I think, very fascinating account of the role of sort of floods in Augustine thought as a metaphor, where floods both, in a sense, destroy the world, but it's also a chance for people to sort of be baptized and spiritually renewed in that way. And their chapters, they point out, which I never really thought about until I read it, which are floods and floods in Augustine's thoughts are sort of the bookends. It's the beginning of the world and the end of the world in that way. So who knows? Maybe Augustine's onto something with climate change.
Yeah, and you make nodding reference to, or your authors, you and your authors make nodding reference to climate change, but there isn't anything that's particularly focused on it. Maybe because we aren't per se in the middle of a disaster, but maybe multiple disasters that are the result of climate change.
Well, I think it's difficult for political theorists. I'll speak only for political theorists. I think it's difficult for political theorists to sort of analyze a situation in the moment or that's predictive. And I think our best work is really retrospective in that way. And so, I thought about including climate change into it, but it seems to me that my fear is that we'd probably be bogged down into scientific debates, which sort of gets us nowhere in some way. So I thought it better put it off to the side for this moment. But clearly climate change would qualify as a disease and disaster.
Well, you know, obviously, because we have all of these disasters that come from climate change. But there are a lot. There's like not one.
That's right. I think that also makes it very difficult. How do you pinpoint it, right? I think it's very difficult to analyze, yeah.
So now that you have finished working on Diseases and Disasters, Lee, what are you up to next, or what are you in the middle of? There's something about Melville going on.
No, nothing on Melville. I wish, but that'd probably take too long of my life to really figure out what he's trying to say. I'm working with actually Rick Aramenko on an edited collection on Canadian conservative thought. So that's going to be coming out soon. We're just doing the final proofs on it. That's also going to be a Routledge. We thought it'd be interesting just because, one, is there such a thing as Canadian conservative thought? And if there is, what is that? What we found, I think, is very interesting is that Canadian conservative thought has a greater role for the state than you would find, say, in American conservative thought. So it's a different type of conservatism. And I think it might be very useful for American conservatives to look at Canada as a possible way to sort of figure out where they want to go. I mean, as you know, sort of the conservative, the American conservative movement is sort of in disarray at the moment. They don't know what they want to be. And, maybe Canada can offer some light on their debates.
And anything else up your sleeve at the moment?
Eventually, at one point, I would like to get back to a monograph on Russian literature. But, the problem is those novels are 1,000-plus pages, so it takes a while.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does. Maybe I was confusing the Russian literature with Melville's Moby Dick. I think
they're equally as long and complicated.
Great respect, but long books. I would like to thank Lee Trepanier for joining me today on the New Books in Political Science podcast to talk about making sense of diseases and disasters, reflections of political theory from antiquity to the age of COVID. This was published in 2023 by Routledge Press. I assume one can pick it up at Routledge Press's website.
Yes.
Any brick and mortar stores down by where you live that you want to give a shout out to?
Are the local Barnes & Nobles and Birmingham, okay. Alabama.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lee, to talk about this fascinating book.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure.